Hello, everyone. There are three hosts, which means three times of talking, which means we're going to just dive into today's episode. Royals, Guardians, who do you got? Make sure to comment below.
You are Locked On Guardians, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Guardians, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Locked On Guardians / Locked On Royals. I'm Jeff. We have Justin and Rylan joining us today on the show. We're going to talk about two teams that have definitely had their moments of rivalry, two teams that I feel like have been in the same conference my entire life. It's not something you can say with years of realignment and all the changes that have occurred. I want to thank you for making whatever Locked On show you prefer, you're first today and every day wherever you get podcasts. And no matter who your team is, we have you covered every day. Having said that, listen, I know Guardians fans are going to be curious about Tristan McKenzie. Justin and I will have some tweets on it. 2 to 8 weeks, not ideal. But we'll maybe get into that some more on the show. Rylan, thanks for jumping in and talking some AL Central with us today.
Thanks for having me. Always love to get together preseason with you guys and talk about these two teams.
Yes,
there's a Royals tit and Cleveland tit in Kansas City now, I should say. Now that you've got Matt Cattaro and who's the pitching coach now? Who is with Cleveland? I'm drawing a blank on the name. The pitching coach.
Oh,
Brian yes. Sweeney. Brian Sweeney. So the Royals are coming for Cleveland's best minds.
Former Cleveland owner too.
That's right. Yeah. One time minority owner for Cleveland. So things are getting really Cleveland tinted down there in Kansas City. What are your guys' thoughts on the Royals and bringing in some Cleveland minds down there?
Yeah, I've been extremely happy with what's happened this offseason. I really look at this offseason as the first offseason of Sherman's ownership because he took over, COVID happened. Then you're kind of tied to Dayton Moore, who brought this team, obviously, a World Series, and just the weird nature of having to let him go, and it was time to let him go. He was not any good in his job anymore. And now I feel like the Royals are finally taking a step forward instead of 50 million steps backwards. I think that this is the right way to do things. You take the model from Cleveland, you take the model from Tampa Bay, and you implement it in Kansas City. You cannot continue to fool yourself. You've got to operate by getting smart baseball people in here. You've got to operate in the margins. You've got to operate as small market teams do and sustain that success. I mean, I know that the Royals were able to capture that World Series in 2015. They went to the World Series in 2014, but those are the two postseason berths in my entire lifetime. Other than that, it's been 100 lost seasons and terrible baseball. While the Rays and Cleveland have not captured that World Series in my lifetime either, at least they've been there. At least they've sustained success. At least that they've given you plenty of summers of fun baseball. And that's kind of what this sport is all about. And I think that this team is now set in a path to begin to have sustained winners. Whenever you look at this lineup of young hitters, and then you look at who your brain trust is and their track record of being able to find young, maybe undervalued pitchers that they can start to bring in the future.
Yeah, that lineup is interesting to me, honestly. Like, I got to be honest, the outside looking in, and this is probably – we'll see what Brian Sweeney does with them pitching-wise because I don't know that the pitching has really taken that step yet. So we'll see what they can change to. But, man, that lineup to me – I don't know about you, Jeff, but that lineup is at least the top four to me looks like it could be really scary. Bobby Witt looks like a future star. MJ Melendez is really good. Salvador Perez. I don't know how many more years he's going to keep being Salvador Perez in terms of production. He'll always be named Salvador Perez, but and I really like Vinny Pasquantino. And so Framil Reyes made the opening day roster. Is that right? Did that actually happen?
Yeah, he did. Boy. The reports were today that he made the opening day roster and is going to be sometimes in the lineup, but mostly going to try to use him as a pinch hitter. So they tried that today against Texas in their exhibition game. So he made it though. He was able to break camp.
Wow.
Yes, there's another former Guardian.
That won't come back to hurt the Guardians at all. I could just see it now. Let's see. They play Kansas City for the first time. Gosh, they don't play until – is that June, really? Is it June for the first time? I could just see it now, though. That last week of June at Kauffman Stadium, I can see Framil Reyes coming up and hitting a game tying homer.
With the Royals' youth, by then he won't be there. That's there's such a good young team with good young prospects. I just feel like it's just a matter of, like, when you're keeping a guy to be a pinch hitter, it's, I don't know, maybe I'll be wrong.
He'll be 28. We think he's 28. Who really knows? But it says he's almost
there's 20. Debate about that.
That's not even though, but 28 is just not that old yet.
No, it's not. 28 is not that old. That is correct statement. I'm not going to imply any more of what got implied at various times last year, but no, I agree. Like, the top of that is such a fun lineup with those young players. I think probably the guy most Guardians fans don't know is Vinny Pascotino. Bobby Witt was a big hype guy. MJ Melendez, maybe not as well known. I would love to see him catch at some point. I know it's a hard situation with Salvi there, but with Pascotino, I feel like, you know, as a day three guy who just obliterated baseballs in AAA last year, what can you tell the person who's not familiar with him? How would you describe Pascotino?
I think that Pascotino is exactly what baseball fans want in a hitter. If you are a baseball fan, like pre-2000, because he doesn't strike out very much. You can go dig into his strikeout numbers and find all these really fun historic facts about how little he strikes out, especially compared to the modern game. It's not just in Kansas City either. Like, the host of Locked On Prospects, Lindsey Crosby, went on our show and said that he was going to lead the AL in batting average this year as a 25-year-old, which would be incredible. I hope that happens, and I really do buy into him being awesome. He has a fun nickname, Italian Breakfast. And I think that this is a guy that you can really get around. It's a pretty swing, hits for average, has a nice glove at first, I think. I think that maybe I'm too high in his glove at first compared to most people who are more so neutral on Vinny than I am. But I think that he is someone that you should really watch out for. He, of all these names, besides Bobby Witt, obviously, Vinny, I think, has some of the most pop potential in the sense of, like, he will make you know who he is by the end of the year. But MJ Melendez is also up there for me. I think that this lineup has actually a lot of intriguing young hitters. It's just that, surprisingly, like, whenever we look back on the streetboard from like a 5 year ago standpoint, we thought they were stocking up on pitchers. They've all sucked except for Brady Singer. It's actually been the hitters who are now really good and really exciting. Like, even Mike Massey down the order, who's only 25, looks to be a really promising middle infielder for the Royals. So Vinny Pascotino, though, I think will be your favorite Royal if you're not a Royals fan.
Historically, if you ask any of my friends, historically, I'm not a Royals fan. I used to hate Whit Merrifield, and I used to, when Whit Merrifield first came up, I was like, this guy's not going to sustain what he's doing. It's just, you know, luck. It's not going to pan out. And then it worked out for him. And then I just was like, I felt like forever the Royals were filled with guys like Whit Merrifield, who I'm like, nah, that guy's not going to keep being good. He's just going to flame out. And then it never happened. And I don't know. I just kind of applied that logic to the rest of the Royals. So if you tell me that Vinny Pascotino is going to be my favorite Royal, if you're not a Royals fan, I just assume he's going to be really, really annoying and really good. But hopefully Italian Breakfast is a lot nicer than Country Breakfast, because Country Breakfast...
Or English Breakfast.
Yeah, they
we can debate the breakfast.
The Royals love big first basemen and naming them after breakfast. So I think it's worked out before. I hope it works out again.
Yeah, they, big was definitely...
I think.
As I say, big was definitely the key of the Dayton Moore era. It felt like if you are under 6'3", you might as well not apply. What changes are you seeing already? As an outside observer, I was kind of curious about this, because they kept it kind of internal when they brought in the new GM. Are you seeing big changes? Is this a big switch? Is it a small sea change? I was kind of curious, just since normally we see these changes happen with like someone external coming in.
This is a great topic that I think that obviously it's just guessing, because no one's in the room where it happened, and I don't pretend to have any sort of sources or anything. With JJ, I think JJ Piccolo was in a situation where, yes, he did work for Dayton Moore, But as we know, that does not mean you agree with everything Dayton Moore ever did, or any of the moves that he made, or any of the strategies that he had. Like, we've all disagreed with bosses before. I think that JJ is actually a really more, a much more progressive mind in baseball than Dayton was. I think that he's somebody that does care more about analytics, does care more about decision-making and savviness and winning in the margins than Dayton Moore did. And I think that he has so far proven that, and so far has proven that he deserves a fair shake, and not to just kind of put him in a box of, well, this is just Dayton Moore Jr. Because while he did learn from Dayton Moore, while he did, you know, be an executive under Dayton Moore, that does not mean that he agreed with everything Dayton Moore ever did. I think that one of the big things that you're seeing this year is not holding on to guys just because they have emotional value to the fan base, and more so wanting production and making some controversial decisions. Like, I don't feel like Dayton Moore would ever make a controversial move in his life. And this week alone, we've seen JJ send down Josh Domont, who had the man bun through 105 miles an hour. But look, he couldn't find the zone, and they sent him down out of camp and want him to work down there. Also sent down Richard Lovelady, who actually had a phenomenal spring, like a near perfect spring statistically for the Royals, but he's coming off Tommy John, and they want to put him in the minor leagues and maybe work him out there for a little bit. But like, those are two moves that I don't think Dayton Moore would have done, because it would have, you know, rocked the boat, so to say. Whereas JJ and Matty Q, they are all about balancing kind of young players, and you want to play young players and you want to get them experience, but also you don't want to put them in a spot to fail. So while sure, surprisingly, because of the new schedule, they're not going to play the Guardians until June. But like, yeah, by then, maybe Framber Reyes is no longer on this team. Maybe Matt Duffy is no longer on this team, and they just had a hot spring, and they're just kind of a stopgap until some of these other guys get ready. But they're kind of balancing those two acts here in the meantime, better than they did with Dayton Moore and during his era. But I think that JJ does deserve a fair shake, and I'm one that is more negative on the Royals, considering that they've only given me two postseasons in my lifetime. But I do really find optimism in JJ.
And
just to break, I'm just gonna say, you appealed to my nerd side with the room where it happened. I started saying that stuff. We love the nerd stuff here.
We do. No Highlander references today, sorry. But we will instead dive into talking about these are the days new potential these days, every new potential hire can feel like a high stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster and for free. As a teacher, I can say we are always looking for aides, teachers, everything else. It is a shortage in every industry. So using a company like LinkedIn can help you. And right now, add your job in the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. They have simple tools like screening questions that make it easy to focus on candidates with the right skills and experiences so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. That's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. Right now, LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free, keyword free, at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnMLB. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnMLB to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. So I think the other part of it, we did some Royals talk, and I can already hear our YouTube comments about, is this Locked On Royals? When we post this on Locked On Guardians, we got a few of those fans who will take it that way. My question to you then, as someone, you know, who watched the Guardians, you know, when you're facing the Royals, maybe some other times throughout the year, I don't know what everyone's baseball watching style is like. Like, watching, this was a team that had no expectations a year ago, that when we did our roundtable, most people had them fourth or fifth in the division, and they won the division. What is your view on this Guardians team for this year? Are they a team like in the division you think can hold that up? And then and as an addendum to that, like, who are the guys you like to watch? Who are the guys that maybe you really don't like to watch that on this Guardians team?
Yeah, I mean, I might be a myopic Royals fan in saying this, but I think that the Stephen Kwan phenomenon started in Kansas City. So yeah. Obviously I have a very bad memory of him just dominating Kansas City and becoming a household name for the entire rest of the season. But this Guardians team reminds me a lot of the 2015 Royals in the sense of the lineup. Like, the lineup, I don't think if you brought it over to Joe Random on the street, they'd know a lot of the names or would have any kind of fond memories of a lot of the names, but they just get the job done and they're able to string together some runs and string together success and kind of pass the line, as you know, keep the line moving, is what Kansas City used to call it back in the day. I think that this lineup is interesting to me because there's a part of me that just wants the default to like, well, they won it last year, they're going to win it again. And there's another part of me that kind of wonders, well, these guys are all really young, and now that they've been through the big leagues and big league pitchers have now seen them perform, is there a world in which they have a regression year, so to say, because big league pitchers then figure you out, then you have to adjust to those adjustments, and that sometimes can take half a year, and by that time, maybe in a more competitive division this year, then all of a sudden the Cleveland team has kind of fallen back a little bit in the standings. So the lineup is interesting. I love watching Steven, even though he's really annoying and even though he dominates the Royals, he is just, as a pure baseball fan, fun to watch. Josh Naylor is one of my favorite players in the division because he's just this lovable teddy bear that mashes home runs and screams in your face, and I love that style of play.
That's a minority in the division outside of Cleveland. I'll say you are in a very small White group. Sox, I just have to interrupt.
White Sox don't like
him. And twins do not like him. True. So you
and Royals fans get to like these guys because we understand heading into it. We're not going to be in competition. Like it's sure you want to win every game, you want to beat your division rivals, but like it doesn't really matter because the Royals are going to lose 100 games or like lose 85 games or whatever the case is going to be this year for the Royals, to where they can just sit back and enjoy. It's not as high stakes as watching it from the Twins perspective or White Sox perspective and all of this. And the rotation, it's just always great. And I love Shane Bieber. That's not a hot take by any means, but I love Shane Bieber. I love what this pitching staff can become and always becomes, it feels like, in Cleveland. So in the sense of the division, I think that this division, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, because you guys, you know, of course, live and die with every game, whereas Royals fans are kind of more so in the granular developmental mode. But I feel like this division goes from one of the most sleepy, boring divisions to instantly one of the more fun divisions in baseball this year, because I think that the White Sox are going to get a lot better with Pedro Grifol as their manager. I think that he's going to make them perform at a higher level than Tony could. I think that I love what the Twins did in improving their pitching depth. I love Pablo Lopez. I love what they've added to their roster. They get better. And Cleveland, like, again, Cleveland's roster might not appeal to random baseball fans on the East Coast or West Coast or people that don't kind of follow this division, but the lineup always produces, you know, and this organization always finds talent to where they're not going anywhere, and they have probably the best skipper in the division. I don't think that that's controversial to say either. So whenever you look at it, I think that Cleveland does deserve that respect of being the favorite to win this division right now, even though there are still a little bit of question marks.
Yeah, I think it's still up for grabs. I mean, I think Cleveland probably is the favorite. I mean, we're going to be biased and say that, but they did it last year, even though I didn't expect them to be as good as they were last year. I think I had them close to 500 last year, so it was really unexpected. And like you said, there could be some regression. We already found out tonight that Tristan McKenzie could miss 2 to 8 weeks of action, and I think Jeff and I will try to address that towards the end of the podcast. But yeah, a lot of things, you know, could throw a wrench into it. And funny enough, the two teams last year, I know Cleveland struggled with the Tigers last year. Like, out of all the teams in the division, Cleveland went 10-9 against the Tigers last year, which is really odd. I think they were 12-7 against KC, so they fared a little bit better. But I feel like there were nights where they had a hard time with Kansas City. I mean, Class A had that one weird blown save out there. They had a rough opening part of the season in Kansas City outside of Stephen Kwan going absolutely berserk. You brought up an interesting topic that I know we kind of discussed. And if you're listening out there to any of the Lockdown podcasts, the Lockdown AL Central podcast should be coming out into your feeds here this week. So stay tuned for that. And one of the topics that was brought up on that, I'll spoil a little bit early, was would you rather win the World Series once and then be terrible for, you know, however long? Or would you rather be competitive every year and not really know the outcome? And I've had this debate with a lot of people, because this is obviously, Cleveland hasn't won a World Series since 1948. The Royals were in back-to-back World Series and they won one of them, but they've been pretty dreadful otherwise. Well, I guess they weren't that bad in 2017. They were, you know, in the race. Or was that 2016? I can't remember. They were good.
16, they were in there, and then they fell off at the very end.
Yeah, but you know, it's been tough to watch, I assume. So my thinking has always been, it's a 6 month sport. Like April, September is a long time. If you want to capture baseball fans as long as possible, I'm much more interested personally in a season where you could win 85 to 92 games and, you know, your outcome in the playoffs is very unknown. But some people are like, ah, championship or bust. To me, the championship or bust mentality is so bad, because if the only way you can enjoy your any sport, not just baseball, if the only way you can enjoy watching your team play in a season is if they win the championship, otherwise it's a failed season, you're going to be really miserable every year. Except, like, you know, all those years being a Tom Brady fan or something, like, that's the only time you could guarantee you wouldn't be. But so what are your thoughts, considering your team has been, it's been opposites, you know, Cleveland's been pretty good for the most part and haven't gotten over the hump. The Royals haven't been quite as good, but, you know, they did make it to the promised land, and flags do fly forever.
Yeah. It's such an interesting topic. And I think it depended, and it kind of varies sport to sport. Like I mentioned on the show you're going to hear tomorrow, that for like a football type of season, you'd much rather go for broke and go win a championship, because it's just in and out painless. But for baseball, like baseball, the season is the most enjoyable part, because that's what you most get. Like the whole point of baseball is every day I have a friend in whoever your commentators are, whoever is on your team, whoever you watch the games with, whoever you talk about them with. Like that is something that you get to do every single day for the majority of the year. Like there's only two off months of the season, like of the year, where you're not even close to baseball, which is would be like mid-December, you know, all of December, and then like mid-November, there's nothing. But like other than that, baseball's around the corner in January. Other than that, you're playing the World Series in October. So like baseball is here for you nonstop. And I would much rather my team play more meaningful games than not. And being good in the regular season gives you 162 meaningful games. Like the Royals this year will play like three meaningful games. Opening day will be meaningful. Memorial Day is always great. Fourth of July is always great. Other than that, it doesn't really matter. Like other than that, their season is over in terms of win-loss record. And like it doesn't, like it's just over. If everything goes the way it's supposed to go on paper, obviously they could shock the world. They could be like Baltimore last year and somehow go on a run where they finish close to 500 or at 500 because all these young bats hit, which is a possibility. But if we're just going to work in the more probable world, they're not going to have competitive baseball games by the 4th of July. So that sucks. Like that sucks. That takes away half of the enjoyment of the season. And I think that it depends where you're at in your life. Like for me growing up, me and my dad watched terrible Royals teams, and all my friends were Rangers fans, and they were incredible. Whenever I was a kid, you know, going to back-to-back World Series, they didn't win either one of them, but they went to back-to-back World Series. They had a fun team, and being from Oklahoma, their minor league team was in Oklahoma City. So like we got to watch Kinsler and all those guys, Elvis, all those guys come through the system and eventually go to Arlington. And all my friends were making fun of the Royals because they lose 100 games every year. But we went through all of that, and then we got the reward of going to two World Series. We got the reward of sharing a World Series together. And those are memories that I wouldn't trade for anything, even if I have to watch 20 more 100 loss seasons, as bad as they are. Now, if you're in a different spot in life it doesn't really, those things aren't as prevalent for you, or you're the only baseball fan in your life where you're not going to share that with somebody, then I'd much rather have just the everyday constant of what baseball provides. Because being a Royals fan, where it feels like a chore to watch these games sometimes, before they called everybody up, like 2 years ago, whenever they had nobody and they were losing 100 games, and they didn't even have a Bobby Witt or Jim Melendez to get excited about at that point at the big league level. When it feels like a chore to watch your team, that just sucks, because the whole point of baseball, like I said, is more of a social aspect. But that's kind of where I'm at. I would much rather be the Rays and much rather be the Guardians than Kansas City, even though they fell short in the World Series. The Rays have been to the World Series in my lifetime the same amount as the Royals have, and they've been in the playoffs a whole lot more, to where if a ball bounces differently, then all of a sudden you can win a World Series. Like what happened in Kansas City? 2014, they had a magical, just unseen comeback in the wild card game. That you play a game 10 times, only happens once, and then you go to the World Series because of it. In 2015, even though they went wire to wire in the division, they should have lost, like quote-unquote should have lost on paper, in every round. They had lucky, fluky breaks, whatever you'd want to demean them as, to get to the World Series and then to win it. Even though they won the World Series in short order, they still had that magical comeback in game one. Still, it took Matt Harvey being left in too long and Hosmer with a mad dash home that any first baseman makes 9 times out of 10 to gun him down at the plate. Like, it took all those events to have the Royals win a World Series, to where if you give yourself more shots at that, if you give yourself more playoff opportunities, then you get more fluky plays like that unless you get more World Series. You can't go in a World Series unless you're in the dance every year. And you might fall short most of the time, but you got to be in there. And baseball is only second to hockey in terms of fluky results. So just get in there and then see whenever you can actually win one.
And those are all great points on that. I agree. It's, I think the one thing we've seen is the closest the Guardians have gotten is the year that everyone was hurt and they shouldn't win it. So you never know what's going to happen when you get into the postseason. But what I do know about is our next fantastic sponsor. And those are our good friends over at Built Bar. The Built Bar March Madness bracket is here. We know you have a favorite bar or puff, and now is your favorite time. Now is your time to make your favorite count. Go to builtbarmarchmadness.com to vote for your favorites. You know, I'm going to be voting. I've talked about this several times on the show. Coconut Brownie Chunk, last year's winner, is the one I would likely vote again this year. And if you want the Guardians to win, then you'll be voting for that bar too. Support your team, support your bar or puff. And when you vote for your favorite bar or puff, you'll be entered in a drawing where 50 lucky Locked On listeners will get a free box. Not only that, but one Locked On fan will win a 12-month subscription to Built to have Built's best bars or puffs delivered every month straight to your door. You got to try it. Built, the best tasting protein bar ever. Seriously, they're so amazing you won't even think they're good for you. What makes Built bars and puffs so good? Well, for starters, they're high in protein, low in sugar, and covered in 100% real chocolate. That's right, real chocolate. Run to BuiltBarMarchMadness.com right now to vote for your favorite bar or puff and pick up a box while you're there. You can vote every day in March, so hop in and support your pick.
It is such a weird situation. They're not playing till June this year. I feel like for years it was like, you know, you'd play the Tigers and the Royals, like right out of the gate, like 6 or 7 times, and then they wouldn't play again until like July. It's going to be really, really weird not to have all those matchups. Like there would be a stretch there where like you would see Kansas City for 2 straight months, and then you wouldn't see Kansas City again until the end of the year. I'm kind of curious to see how that changes things in the division. What are your thoughts on the schedule change, Ryan?
I think that this is the only division that's negatively impacted by it, because if you do get good in this division, you get to beat up on Detroit and you get to beat up on Kansas City. Whereas in other divisions, it's a godsend that the Orioles no longer have to bash their head against the Yankees and bash their head against the Blue Jays every time you turn around. And goodness gracious, the West and the NL, and even now with the Rangers getting better, and the AL as well. Like there's no other division in baseball where it hurts them more than it does in this division. The two East divisions, the two West divisions are both a bloodbath where you like getting away from those guys as much as you can. And sadly for you guys who are actually competitive this year, like it's going to suck not getting to have the punching bags in the division as often, to where I think that from that perspective, it hurts, you know, Cleveland in the immediate future. I think for baseball though, it's great. I think that for baseball as a sport, it's awesome that you're going to get to watch every single superstar this year that's healthy, as long as they're healthy whenever they play your team. But that's the case in any season. I think that baseball is so regionalized, and you mentioned, you know, you don't want to, you know, forecast anyone's baseball viewing habits. Like if you're going to watch your team play, they play every day, and that's probably the only bandwidth that you have is one game per day. And so if your team never gets to go play the Angels, you never get to watch Shohei Ohtani. So getting to see him come to town or getting to have your team go out there to where you're going to watch him on television, that I think is great for baseball and great to start the process of having more marketable stars. We've been talking about this for years of there's no marketable guy, maybe because the majority of your audience doesn't get to cross over and see a lot of these guys. So I do think that the schedule works out good.
We didn't talk about it when you talked about the hitting, but I'd be remiss if we didn't, before we finished the show, I did shout out Drew Saylor. I think a lot of Royals fans have given him a lot of credit for the evolving hitting prospects in the system. Drew Saylor is a Barberton, Ohio native. I can't remember where he went to high school.
I believe he went to Barberton.
He went to Kent State and played for the Lake Erie Crushers for a little bit. But shout out to Ohio native Drew Saylor. What are your thoughts on Drew Saylor?
Yeah, I think that he's been a part of the revolution of the hitters, and shout out to the Flash. But yeah, he's been great. He's been great. Isn't that what Kent State's called, the Golden Flash? But yeah, he's been awesome. He's been awesome in the system, and I love ripping off Cleveland and ripping off Tampa Bay. That's the model. Like, that's the way Kansas City wins. Like, that's the way it's supposed to be done. You're not going to fool anyone into thinking that you're not one of these small market teams. This is the only blueprint to win in baseball sustainably is Cleveland and Tampa Bay at this market size.
I don't know. The Twins have a fair amount of Cleveland guys. They're not. You've got Derek Falvey, and I don't know who else is in that system there truly, but they have Derek Falvey, and I mean, the Twins haven't quite replicated that success just yet. So I don't know. Is it one of those things where, like, you know, all the guys from Bill Belichick's tree get hired and none of them do really well? Like, who has been picked off from Cleveland that's had a lot of success? I can't think off the top of my head, but are there any guys out there who have been picked off?
Dan O'Dowd had a decade run. It's still Colorado's most successful run.
Yes, him. But let's talk about, like, the last, like, decade or so. Because a lot of guys have been hired in the last decade. Neil Huntington.
Took the Pirates to their only postseason appearance in 30 years. That's got to count for something.
I'm just curious. Like, I feel like Derek Falvey hasn't quite gotten over the hump yet. And I don't know, I guess you could say in Tampa Bay, Kevin Cash came from the Terry Francona coaching tree, and they've done pretty well. So I don't know. Maybe it's not a mixed bag, but does that give Royals fans a lot of hope?
I think that with Royals fans, it's like, at least you're trying to replicate their model, right? So obviously they could fail, like they could not work, but it's not going to be because the blueprint's wrong. Whereas with Dayton Moore, it felt like the blueprint was wrong. Like, it felt like the steps that you were taking were wrong. That you might end up taking the steps where you're trying to win the margin and you're trying to evaluate players like Cleveland does, like Tampa Bay does, and you're just wrong on some players. That's fine. Everyone's going to be wrong on players. Everyone's going to miss on players. But when your process of evaluating the players is so off base, like Dayton's was, then that's where it becomes frustrating. Then that's where it becomes a point of contention for fans. So I think that fans right now are just buzzing with excitement of, yeah, this might end up being where it's unsalvageable for the short term. Like, there's a world where no one but Brady Singer of that entire pitching class is any good at all. And like, and at that point, you would need to take a huge step back. You would need to rebuild yet again. But at least now in that rebuild, you feel confident in your decision makers, where that wasn't the case before. And so right now, that's just kind of the honeymoon phase that everything's in right now.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that was, you know, I just remember watching that draft class unfold where it's five pitchers in a row and, you know, that very specific type. And I agree. It was definitely, I remember hearing stories about, like, if you were a college player back when I wrote about the draft, that you would respond to questions differently if you're talking to the Royals, because you did not want to seem too analytical as opposed to if you're talking to a team like the Guardians. I do agree. It does seem like a important change in Kansas City has happened. And, you know, we were talking before the show, the fun thing is this year's draft class looks like one for the ages so far. So originally it maybe didn't look great for KC, but it looks like they'll get another high-end prospect sitting where they are. And at least, again, you have to have that solid base. If you're a Cleveland fan, we have all seen what happens through our football team, what happens when the ground is not solid and you are constantly stuck in that building cycle. So, I guess if you're a Guardians fan, it's unfortunate because it does seem like the Royals finally have a solid base in place. And but Ryland, thanks for joining us. Thanks for jumping in here. You know, it's fun to talk division. It's fun to get that outside view, and it's fun to talk with one of the other hosts who's been around for a very long time. I know you and I are some of the bedrock guys, Justin. I'm very grateful he's joined me here on the show, but it's nice to always see the familiar faces still being there running these teams in the AL Central, where we've had some turnover. I think you and I are about it since maybe 2 years ago. We're the only one who have been here for two seasons.
That's true. And hopefully we get to do this again in June. Hopefully that series matters for both teams, but let's not hold our breath too much. But I think that if these young bats can all pan out, hope springs eternal. If these young bats can all pan out, maybe that end of June series will be pretty fun.
Certainly. Again, thank you all who watched and or listened. Remember to download, subscribe, like, Leave a review on iTunes, all that fun stuff. Download every day. That just is a simple thing you can do to help both of our shows grow. And make sure to subscribe on YouTube. Thank you all for listening. And the part that might get cut out on the Royals end, but the way we end every show is go, go, Guardians, go.